The West Live. The West Live. With Ben O'Shea. Brought to you by the WA Local Government Association. What's your happy place?
There have been renewed calls to give over 50s the Pfizer vaccine, with WA's new AMA president calling on the state government to go against national guidelines and prioritise over 50s before giving West Aussies in their 20s the Pfizer vaccine. Joining me now to unpack this suggestion is infectious diseases physician and microbiologist Professor Paul Griffin. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Thanks for having me again.
And so what do you make of this idea that the 50s to 59s are more vulnerable to COVID-19, so let's give them the Pfizer jab before we open it up to the 20s to 29s?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpick there. I mean, I guess the first thing to say is I don't think it's necessarily productive to suggest undermining the national advice, which is based on genuine expert advice from the ATAGI, the group that advised the TGA, who are comprised of a lot of, you know, genuine experts in this area and are making decisions based on best evidence. So I think that in itself is a little bit disappointing. And, you know, we can debate the best groups to use which vaccine in, but the key thing here is the AstraZeneca vaccine remains a safe and effective vaccine in the group in which we're using it. And so if we were to prioritise Pfizer in that group, it would mean we would have to compromise on our vaccination of other groups. And if we reduce our ability to vaccinate those people in their 20s and 30s, for example, well, they're a group that actually are responsible for a lot of transmission of the virus. So if we pivot against that advice and use the precious resource perhaps inappropriately, then I think we're going to leave ourselves very vulnerable moving forward.
I think that's a very interesting point to make, because now that's what we're seeing around the world, isn't it? That even though this younger cohort might not be at as much risk to end up in hospital with COVID, they certainly seem to be the ones who are spreading it the quickest.
That's exactly right. We know that those people, through certain behaviours and other things, are responsible for a vast majority of the transmission. So while it's certainly correct that the older you are, the more likely you are of bad consequences from the infection, we also need to do something to reduce the spread of the virus. And I think if people suggest, oh, well, let's just wait for an alternative, there are real risks of waiting as well. And we've seen that unfold in other countries like Taiwan, for example, where COVID came back with a vengeance. And then it's very hard to catch up your vaccination campaign while the virus is raging in the population. And to a lesser extent, of course, but in a similar sort of principle, we saw that recently in Victoria. So we really do need to get cracking with the vaccination campaign to make sure we're protected and don't have to rely on lockdowns and border restrictions.
I guess the tough thing, though, is you and me have spoken many times about the, you know, how rare the blood clotting is with the AstraZeneca vaccine. But the reality now is that the brand AstraZeneca has been tainted, and to what degree, I guess, might vary from one state to the next. But here in Western Australia, I'll tell you this story that I was told yesterday by someone who went to the mass vaccination centre in Claremont, and the Pfizer vaccination area absolutely chock-a-block. Like, it was line after line after line of people waiting to roll up their sleeve. And the other section where people were getting the AstraZeneca vaccine, a couple of people.
Yeah, and that's why I think, you know, messaging like we're hearing at the moment is potentially fueling that rather than addressing it. I think we really do need to work on getting the messaging right. I mean, I think there's so many misconceptions about that vaccine. There are still people that talk about it being inferior in terms of how it works, and we know that's just simply not the case. And yes, it's clear it has an adverse event that's very unfortunate, and we'd love a vaccine that doesn't have any, but unfortunately that doesn't exist. And Pfizer also has adverse events related to it. But the key thing here is this expert group, ATAGI and the TGA, continuously monitor adverse events of all vaccines, both locally and abroad. And if at any stage those events mean that the risks outweigh the benefits, well, then they simply wouldn't use the vaccine. So I think for one area to suggest that they would like to deviate from that advice potentially fuels the negative messaging around that vaccine rather than addresses it.
Mm. And do you think when the AMA comes out and says that's something that needs to happen, does it show that maybe there is a schism that exists, I guess, in the medical community over how to proceed with the vaccine rollout?
I think it can. I think it can certainly lead to to people having less confidence in those people that are making the decisions, because I guess they wonder why certain people are saying things that do seem against the expert advice, when the majority of us are saying we should have faith in that advice and trust that regulatory body that, you know, whose sole responsibility it is to ensure that we only use safe and effective vaccines and medicines. And, you know, it's clear it's not in their interest to allow a vaccine to be used if it wasn't very clear that the benefits outweighed those risks. And, you know, the other thing about AstraZeneca is it's one we can make locally, so we're less susceptible to the supply constraints that we still see with Pfizer. So again, if people are saying they're going to wait for an alternative, they might be waiting a very long time.
Because talking to people, it does seem not so much about a fear of AstraZeneca. It's about, I guess, the being disgruntled about not having a choice.
Yeah, and I completely understand that, but I guess the thing people need to realise there is that we simply don't have enough of these vaccines yet. Obviously, we're still in a global pandemic, and manufacturing is exceeded by supply at the moment. So, you know, it would be great to potentially have 50 million doses of Pfizer on shore, but it's just not going to happen. And it's great that we now have Novavax coming soon and Moderna, but again, you know, those vaccines will be subject to supply constraints as well. So, you know, AstraZeneca is the one we have the most ready access to, because it can be made on shore, and so I think we need to be really careful in anything that undermines that the use of that vaccine, because, you know, as I say, it's very clear that the benefits still outweigh those risks.
Well, the benefits, of course, are in preventing future outbreaks. And there's one over on your side of the country that we're watching very closely, a source of community transmission in Bondi after a man in his 60s tested positive. How concerning is that?
I think we don't necessarily have to be unduly concerned. I think what's clear is this virus will keep coming, and unless we completely stop anybody coming into the country, which of course is not realistic and not suggesting that happens, but if people are allowed to return, the virus will keep coming. And that's why, you know, I certainly think we need to focus on doing our best to prevent transmission through other mechanisms and hotel quarantine or other quarantine facilities. But still, our best protection from uncontrolled community spread is high rates of vaccination. So again, that's why I think, you know, that needs to be a focus moving forward.
And would you back calls for the business community to get involved in incentivizing people to get the jab?
I think we need to look at everything possible to try and improve our vaccine uptake. I think the messaging, consistent messaging that addresses some of these concerns is very important. I think certain incentives need to be considered. The other thing that I feel strongly about is I think we need to start linking freedoms to people that are vaccinated. For example, if there are travel restrictions in place, then I think people that are fully vaccinated should potentially be able to be exempt from those and maybe have shorter quarantine periods and things like that, for example, because we know the vaccine works, we know it protects people, and so I think we need to acknowledge that in changing some of those restrictions for people that are fully protected.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing some of that strategy work well overseas, where, of course, they have more of an issue with COVID in their communities. Here, where we don't have it as much, there are plenty of people who think, well, I'm already free. I already can walk around, do whatever I want. But international travel is an interesting one, isn't it? And do you back the Prime Minister Scott Morrison in establishing a, say, travel bubble with Singapore?
I do, and particularly when we know we have these effective vaccines that greatly reduce people's risk, then I think that with other mitigation strategies and obviously watching the situation on both sides and, you know, of course, if there was a sharp rise in community transmission, maybe reassessing, you know, as we've done with New Zealand. But I think we do need to start making some inroads in getting some of those things back. And I think travel bubbles with countries with good control in people who are fully vaccinated is something we should certainly start doing.
Over here in Western Australia, we reduced the number of people we're bringing in from overseas, Australians who are returning home, because there were some concerns over our hotel quarantine system. The Premier here is keen to establish a standalone facility. Who pays for it, of course, is the sticking point at the moment. Do you think that's inevitable if we're looking at how long we might be in this pandemic and having to bring people home or open the borders, bring people in, that things like standalone facilities are something that governments should be looking at?
I do. I think that it's something that makes sense, and not only for us to have strategies for the current pandemic and the situation right now, but also for us to have capacity moving forward. I mean, this pandemic itself, unfortunately, is not going away in the months or perhaps even years, and so we do need to have capacity to bring people back safely. And of course, it may be something we can use in future pandemics or to control other things. So I think it would be a very wise investment, and something that probably shouldn't be delayed, because every day that it's delayed, I guess we're reducing the potential benefit from having that capacity. So, but I think we also need to remember it's not a silver bullet. I mean, we've seen obviously someone who was transporting people from overseas potentially still get infected. So we still need to look at how we get people in and out and how we look after them there. But I do think it's something we should have.
Mm. Infectious diseases physician and microbiologist Paul Griffin, thanks for joining me on The West Live.
Thank you.